The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
There are many ways in which academic research serves the community. On this edition of UWM Today, we take a look at one program that is providing a critical public service for our children. It is the Children's Environmental Health Services Core Center. The center, which was created in 2009, is a partnership between UW-Milwaukee, the Medical College of Wisconsin, and the Children's Research Institute. Joining us to discuss this important service to children is David Petering. David is UWM's Distinguished Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry and the Director of the Center. David, great to have you on the program again. And
thanks. I'm glad to be here.
It is a critical piece of work that the center is involved in because it protects our kids. Talk about the relationship between environmental concerns and the particular threat that it causes to children.
You know, there are a lot of ways to think about this issue, so I want to talk about it kind of generally and then more specifically with respect to Milwaukee. First of all, children represent a period in the lifetime of every individual in which they're more vulnerable to disease, and they're more vulnerable to exposure to environmental agents of various sort, which end up being responsible for disease. The reason for this is that, first of all, you're going through development as a fetus and into the birth process and so forth. And during that time, really, the whole body is being constructed. New organs are appearing. The infant has to acclimate to being in this sort of environment. And the metabolism of the infant is much different than an adult, and all of these things go into making it more vulnerable to its environment, whether that be its nutritional environment or its exposure to unwanted chemical agents or whatever we're speaking about. So children represent a particular area of vulnerability that we need to be concerned about. The interesting thing is that within the last 10 to 15 years, it's really been appreciated that what happens during this early developmental period, that could be fetal development but also early development after birth, what happens during that time, period can have lifetime consequences for the future health and good health of the individual. So there's a whole hypothesis that's been developed and explored, sort of the fetal basis of adult disease. And we now understand that conditions that occur during the developmental period, such as just prematurity, low birth weight, and things like this, can lead to higher incidence of adult diseases like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and so forth. And so it's really important to, you might say, take care of the front end of this whole process, our lifetime here on Earth.
Because sometimes we might think that, gee, the child is inside the mother, the mother's protecting that child, and they're safe from harm. But in fact, all of the things that a mother is eating or the chemicals or air that she's breathing can have an impact.
Absolutely. One of the stunning things that I heard, this is years ago, from one of the other centers, these Environmental Health Sciences Core Centers that we're a part of. This was one out at University of Southern California, and of course they focus on air pollution. And it was shown that the exposure of mothers to air pollutants actually affects lung development of the offspring. And so those who had higher exposures showed retarded development all the way through adolescence. And that was just a striking notion that what happens to one generation can affect another generation.
Especially since the children, the infant, the fetus is not breathing yet, and yet it has that impact.
It's kind of remarkable. What's, you might say, even more concerning as we learn more about what happens during development and so forth, is that these sorts of exposures may have, in some cases, what we call transgenerational effects that go well beyond just the mother to the offspring, but actually extend to subsequent generations. And so your first thought is, well, this is a genetic change. This is some sort of change in your genetic material, a mutation or whatever that's taking place. But actually, there are now things called epigenetic changes, effects on your DNA that do not require an actual mutation in the DNA itself, that seem to go along with exposure to various sorts of chemicals. So, for example, we have a member of our center who's at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Michael Carvan, who works with another staff member in our center, Dan Weber, on the impact of methylmercury on development in a zebrafish model. We could come back and talk about the zebrafish later because it's a very interesting topic. But, you know, a real concern is that methylmercury is out in the environment because of basically coal-fired power plants. That mercury ends up getting into ecosystems and concentrating in, for example, aquatic ecosystems, so that if you eat most types of fish, you're getting some exposure to mercury. And there's a concern about particularly mothers and how much fish they eat, precisely because it has mercury in it.
Yeah, you hear warnings periodically.
Right, exactly. You have these, the DNR has warnings about this. Well, it turns out that they found that exposure of embryos, zebrafish embryos, to methylmercury then will cause in the adult of that same generation defects in their neurological responses that are just normal parts of your behavior. it turns out that those defects are propagated through the next two generations and probably beyond that without any straightforward evidence right now that this is a mutational event. It's certainly transgenerational, and they think it's probably epigenetic. That is, that the DNA is being altered, but not in a way that's actually causing a permanent genetic change. But this is a whole new area that actually we didn't even know was on the horizon 10 to 15 years ago.
David, you mentioned the other centers that are there, and well, we have a fabulous center here in Milwaukee. It's one of, what, about 20 or so located around the country?
Right. The National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences is one of the institutes at the National Institutes of Health. And all of these institutes support what are called core centers. And these centers are designed to provide research support, sort of state-of-the-art research support for critical masses of researchers that are found in various regions around the country. So there are around 20 of these. When I talk about the center, I always talk about the fact that, we kind of worked our way into a very elite group here because most of these centers are found at the top universities in a country like Harvard and MIT and Pennsylvania, University of Washington on the West Coast, University of Michigan, and so forth. So we have a center. It's a recognition that there's a large number of funded, recognized scientific personnel in the area of children's environmental health in this region. Our center is really unique in the sense that it's interinstitutional. fact, they almost wonder, what is this all about when you say we're interinstitutional? We're actually this partnership, as you mentioned in your introduction, between University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, which is the lead institution, and I'm the director, and the Children's Research Institute, which itself is an institute that's supported by Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, and then by and large, the researchers in that institute are coming from the Medical College of Wisconsin and its Department of Pediatrics. So we put this group together. My deputy director is the head of pathology, children's pathology over the Medical College, Paula North. She's a great partner. And sort of we build out from there. So other institutions that are represented include Marquette, Concordia, UW-Madison.
Terrific. Is there a specialty that this core center here in Milwaukee focuses on as opposed to those other centers located in other parts of the country?
Right. We're the only one out of those 20 that focuses precisely on children. The reason for the focus on children obviously relates to the expertise that exists here, the opportunity to make this connection between UW-Milwaukee, which has a number of people working in this area, and Children's Hospital and the Department of Pediatrics and so forth. So we have the scientists and scientific expertise in this area. The other side of it, though, is the fact that it's something that's really important. As we've said before, in a general sense, but specifically for Milwaukee. Milwaukee, as probably most of the listeners know, has very bad children's health statistics. We hear mostly about infant mortality.
Co-sleeping, another serious issue.
Right. But when we talk about premature birth, low birth weight, African-American community in Milwaukee has some of the highest levels of those problems of pregnancy and so forth that exist in large cities around the country. So these are major issues. The infant mortality is kind of the worst endpoint of a bad outcome to a pregnancy. And so there are a number of people actually in our center who focus on this issue. We really want to focus on how to understand and hopefully then be able to have a positive impact on what's going on in minority communities, because that's where you see these really bad statistics showing up. So we call this children's environmental health inequities. One of the things that's a buzzword, but it's a really important one to understand, is the notion of environmental justice. Oftentimes you hear about social justice, of course, but there's also the issue of environmental justice, which comes out of the recognition, increasing recognition, that where you live, the so-called built environment, makes a lot of difference in terms of your health outcomes. The obvious one in Milwaukee and other older big cities is lead and lead exposure. And lead exposure originally because of lead additives in gasoline and so forth that then were exhausted into the environment. And when you're in a city that's you have a lot of concentration of automobiles, you end up with a lot of lead in the environment. Lead, very belatedly, was removed from gasoline in the 1980s in the United States. But the history of that exposure still exists here. So if you go out into the inner city of Milwaukee and test just the environmental lead levels in soils, they're huge. We're talking about 400 or 500 parts per million, 400 or 500 micrograms per gram of soil. Or another way to say it is getting close to a tenth of a percent of the mass in the soil is lead. That's a lot of lead.
And do you think it came or was a residue from
absolutely.
The additive?
Absolutely. But the other source, and it's the one that's still here, is in paint. Once again, you know, there were other countries, in fact, most countries in Europe removed lead from paint before 1930. We removed it in, I think it was the 1980s again. So your older housing stock in the inner city has lots and lots of lead in it. And again, for children who are undergoing neurological development, it's a real concern that they not be exposed to this. So, you know, that's the sort of thing when we talk about environmental justice, because who's living in those older homes? It's poorer people who can't afford newer homes. And so this is a really important sort of issue.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Great to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio, David Petering. David is the Distinguished Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the university and also Director of the Children's Environmental Health Sciences Core Center, one of about 20 core centers that are funded in part by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And we're discussing the impact that center has in helping to create a safer environment, perhaps understand the problems threatening children here in the metropolitan Milwaukee area. David, so good to have you on the program. And as we talk about this issue, can you give us some other examples of the research that is being done by you and your colleagues looking at the threats or the risks that children have here in Milwaukee?
Yeah, now here's an interesting one. Let me go back to the zebrafish. Your listeners may say, zebrafish, that's a model organism for doing biomedical research and so forth.
They don't look anything like people, right?
They don't look like they don't look like rats and mice, the typical organisms that are used as surrogates for humans and trying to understand what's going on in living systems. The zebrafish has become one of the leading models for understanding development in basic biology. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of researchers doing zebrafish research. And the reason is that development occurs very rapidly. It occurs in embryos that are completely clear, optically clear, so that you can microscopically watch the entire process of development. There are all sorts of tools that can cause certain parts of the organism to be visualized microscopically, so you can follow neurological development specifically or some other sort of developmental process for an organ. The system is just beautiful. It's less expensive to deal with and so forth. And we have a top quality aquatic animal facility that's supported through the center that focuses on supporting zebrafish husbandry, development, exposure to chemicals and so forth. And going along with it is a neurobehavioral toxicology laboratory that allows researchers then to use those organisms to study the effects of toxic substances on neurological development. We have excellent staff. Dr. Henry Tomasevich runs the whole thing. Dr. Dan Weber, Chris Kostritz. These are all really top-notch people who have been with us for many years. So there are a number of researchers in the city who utilize this facility. And what I wanted to mention to you in response to your question was some work being done by Kurt Swoboda. Kurt joined UWM just a few years ago as one of the first members of the Environmental Health Group within the new School of Public Health, Silver School of Public Health at UWM. And he's a nationally recognized zebrafish researcher in the area of neurological development. And he focuses on nicotine. And, of course, you're originally thinking about cigarettes. And, of course, one of the many chemicals that one is exposed to during the experience of smoking is nicotine. And so he started out looking at the effects of nicotine on the development of the neurological system, because it's been known for many years that women who smoke suffer low birth weight babies, as well as infants who have other issues as well. As he's gone along, he's gotten pilot project funding from the center to help him move out in other areas and so forth. And basically, now he's to the point where he's found that nicotine is causing birth defects, what he would call birth defects in this model system. And it looks like this is going to be transferable up to mammalian systems as well. You might say, on the one hand, it deepens your concern about smoking, but the new issue is all of these e-cigarettes. These are basically devices that allow you to inhale nicotine without all of the other chemicals that come along with smoking cigarettes.
It comes in a vaporized form.
Yes, a vaporized form. They call it vaping. Yeah. Now, of course, the question is, not only are you becoming addicted to nicotine and possibly move on to cigarettes, but also that the nicotine itself, we know, is a very serious environmental toxic agent. And more young people are experimenting with it. And these are young people who are coming into the age in which if you're a girl or a young woman and so forth, you could become pregnant. So those types of experiments then become transferable into really thinking about real-world exposures and possible outcomes.
One of the other issues I wanted to talk about today is BPA, that chemical that is found in plastics used in baby bottles and the like. The journal Sentinel did an exhaustive series on this about a year and a half ago or so, and we actually won a number of awards for it. You folks are beginning to take a look or are looking at that as one of the risk factors facing children, correct?
Yes, we've had members of our center who have been funded through NIEHS and so forth to study effects of BPA on infants and development and so forth. This is a, you know, when you're talking about low-level exposures in an environment, that's a difficult one to parse in terms of what's its contribution to health and disease of various populations. And the reason for that is that you're never exposed to a single agent. You're walking around in an environment in which you're breathing in air that has air pollutants in. You may be eating food that has some contaminants in it, and so on and so forth. So all of these things impinge upon each individual. And so you're really exposed to mixtures, and it's oftentimes difficult to decide what's of concern and what isn't. What I can say is, again, in the zebrafish model, Dan Weber, the head of our neurobehavioral toxicology lab, and Robert Tangway, who's out at the Oregon State Environmental Health Sciences Core Center, have been working together and demonstrating that there are behavioral effects of BPA, a low concentration on zebrafish. And, you know, those sorts of studies basically alert you to the fact that this potentially could be a problem in humans. It doesn't prove it, but it sort of sets a baseline that says we have to be concerned about this. And the thing I always say, and as a matter of fact, I'm teaching a course to honor students this semester. It's called Sustainable Earth, Sustainable Development in the 21st Century. We talked about what's called a precautionary principle. And this is something that is coming into play more and more, particularly in Europe with respect to chemicals. And the United States tends to be the last one to be pulled in on these things, kicking and screaming. But basically, the idea is if you don't have complete scientifically solid information on something, what's the response going to be? Some people say, well, let's wait. Let's wait until we get that. But by that time, you may have been in a situation or get in a situation, as we are in many cases, where now you have lots of exposed individuals or you have a problem that's way beyond being solved. So the precautionary principle says err on the side of caution. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, basically.
David, what attracted you to this field? Did you know growing up that you wanted to work in children's environmental health, or when did the epiphany happen?
Well, I knew when I was growing up I wanted to go into science. My father was a scientist. And he spent his early days with me trying to convince me not to go into science. Okay, do something else, Dave. Don't just sort of follow the old man. But I did want to go into science. And I think probably, again, through family background, there's always been a concern that we connect up with social issues. And this began to move into the area of environment just because of increasing awareness about this. And I'll have to say, marrying my wife, who actually had a much more acute appreciation of the environment at the time that we were getting married and so forth, had a big impact on me as well to gradually move into that area. I had the opportunity to join at the very beginning the predecessor institution to this Children's Environmental Health Sciences Course Center. And it was started by a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And this was in 1978. And I just joined it because I said, you know, we need to be working together. I didn't know a lot about the areas that he wanted to focus on and so on. I said, but I can probably find something to help contribute to. And this has kind of been a way I've operated through my career. And eventually I became director. And when I was director, then we began to see, well, how can we actually develop this center and so forth? And there were people beginning to use the zebrafish model. And some of the scientists said, you know, we really ought to focus on this. Well, I listened to a lot of people, and they have lots of good ideas. And if I can help that move forward, then I feel good about it. And that's basically, you might say, where we came from. And at some point, we really were doing well working on a zebrafish model. But I said, you know, we really need to link that up more directly with children's environmental health. This is a good model, but let's link it up with those people who are working in that area. So I basically got in touch with people at the medical college and said, let's see if we can't start to work together. And so we started this collaboration. We now have 60 people actually in the center. It's, I would say, the premier interinstitutional operation in the Milwaukee area and so forth in terms of actually bringing people together who are doing research across institutions. And that, to me, has been a great pleasure to see develop.
Well, and great accomplishments to show for, too. David, fascinating talking to you and learning about the center, and we wish you the very best to you and your colleagues as you continue your work looking out for the kids, making sure that the environment that we live in doesn't hurt them but helps them as they grow.
Thanks very much, Tom.
David Petering, UWM's Distinguished Professor of Chemistry and Biochemistry and Director of the Children's Environmental Health Sciences Core Center here in Milwaukee, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. Thanks for joining us. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.